Chapter 13. They took me back down the hallway. My mind raced. The kicking and screaming on the inside started to bubble up, but I didn't dare fight because I knew I'd be overpowered. So instead, I unleashed a torrent of cursing that would make even Nif pause. I was taken out of the plastic tube section of the school and into the hallway they had dragged the twitchy guy down. Two armed guards stood by a pair of double doors, and we went through and outside into the cold night. We faced the playground. I saw a group of suited soldiers setting up a satellite disc thing right over the jungle gym. They worked silently and efficiently. In the distance, the largest helicopter I'd ever seen lowered a whole shipping container onto the open playing field.
You really think this is a good idea to put your base and the prisoners in the same place?
No,
the beanstalk said.
No, I don't.
We turned, passed another set of guards, and went through the double doors of a freestanding, red brick building at the edge of the playground. The sign above read, "The Little Theater," and it was decorated with some eighth notes. More armed guards stood in the entrance lobby to the theater. As we entered, one of the soldiers walked up to us and began talking. I recognized her voice, the female driver who brought me here.
"Remember the doctor who was just here?"
she said, talking to the beanstalk.
"The one who was putting the IV bags in after our first run. She said she grew up here, went to this school."
"Yeah? What about her?"
"She's gone. She just took off her respirator, walked out the door, and disappeared. Nobody knows where she went."
"Fucking A. What the hell is going on?"
the soldier asked. The driver leaned in.
"The nurse says the C2s recognized her. Like all of them. They knew her name. Even though they never saw her face, it being behind the mask and all. They just started talking to her, telling her Joey was safe. It freaked her out."
"We shouldn't be here. This is insane."
I had to admit, it was a relief to hear I wasn't the only one the drones were bugging. But it was chilling, too. Whatever this thing was, it could drag away people, not just animals. I imagined this doctor didn't walk off on her own free will. And that was disturbing. You gotta be reasonably intelligent to be a doctor. The idea of losing control, of moving and talking like a puppet, doing things one would never do, that was the stuff of nightmares. Despite the arrival of the military, the grinder grew stronger. It seemed every hour that passed, it gained a new ability. First, it could attach people to itself. It learned how to manipulate the attached so they acted like limbs. Then came the drones. And now it was attracting people and animals to it from afar. I feared what would come next. I was brought to a pair of padlocked black double doors. More armed guards.
"We're dropping this one off for observation. He's not a C2.
The guard said, looking me up and down.
"I know.
Please don't do this.
I won't forget you're in here. Just stay in the corner or something. I don't think they'll bother you."
"What about his vest? Let him keep it."
He grabbed my wrists and cut, freeing me from the plastic handcuffs.
"He's not going to be a problem."
"All right,"
the guard said, as he unlocked the door and pulled the chain away. He had one of those "I drive a Trans Am" accents.
"But if I catch you banging on this door, pulling anything, I'll have you strapped to a gurney, you understand?"
"Yeah, fuck you too."
I couldn't see the guard's face. But I imagined he had one of those smirking smiles and a greasy, half-grown mustache, and that he spent the weekends torturing small animals. He opened the door, revealing nothing but black.
"Where are the nurses and medics?"
the beanstalk asked, peering into the room.
"Why isn't there any light?"
"After the doctor disappeared, we gave up trying to help them,"
the greasy guard said.
"We're just packing and stacking. It'll be awfully crowded in there soon, too. We got a whole busload coming in 15.
Hush. Good luck."
"Wait!"
But the guard shoved me into the room. The door slammed behind me, followed by the sound of the heavy chains being snaked and locked around the handles.
"You don't even know my name,"
I finished. How were they going to remember me if they didn't even know who I was? Darkness blanketed me. All I could hear was quiet, furtive rustling. I didn't dare move.
"Fuck,"
I whispered. I waited for my eyes to adjust. Windows. Damn. Way too small for escape. And way too high. They surrounded the large room, letting in a meager amount of starlight. Shadows moved and undulated. On the other side of the room, a red exit sign glowed. I doubted the soldiers were stupid enough to leave that door unlocked. I was tempted to go check, but as I looked around at my fellow inmates, it might as well have been across the Grand Canyon and guarded by velociraptors. I stayed put. The room smelled of death and oil, which I recognized all too well as the stench of the captured. The Stepford zombie people. The C2s. I could tell we were in the kids' music classroom. A small stage with a billowy curtain dominated the far wall. Piles of chairs sat stacked against the wall with the glowing exit, and rows of xylophones and drums and baritones and other musical instruments were stacked neatly against the other wall. About 20 people wallowed on the floor in the center of the room. At first I thought they were wrestling. They held on to each other like a rugby scrum, rolling and twisting. In the dark, I couldn't see them too well. But they were people of all shapes, sizes, and ages in various states of undress and health. They held on to each other tightly and silently, scrambling against one another, only to fall back or slip and try again. Oh, God. They were trying to emulate being in the grinder. They weren't the only ones in the room. Several hospital beds lined the stage, though most were empty, and all the trays and IV lines were upended. Several people lay on the floor around the room, including one person by my foot. They all appeared dead or dying. A few leaned up against the wall, rocking back and forth. The guy on the floor next to me twitched, and I backed away. It was the man they had picked up after me, the bearded Circle K guy. Across the room, a man pushed at a pile of chairs, and they went clattering across the floor. He started to write something on the wall, but I couldn't see what it was, or what he was using to write with. I edged my way along the wall until I came to a xylophone on a wheeled stand. I pushed it forward, careful not to make it clang and bring attention to myself. I sank to the floor and pulled the instrument back toward me, which gave me a bit of cover. I brought my knees to my chest. I am going to die in this room. I should have run when I had the chance. They weren't even trying to help these people anymore. They were just locking them up so they couldn't refuel the grinder. The moment these C2s became too much of a problem, G.I. Joe would kill us all. What would happen if the grinder turned in our direction? I had no illusions about the soldiers. They would run, and we'd be on our own, locked in this room, squished or snagged by the monster. A wet, sliding sound slurped across the tiled floor, like a heavy mop raking against Velcro. A whispered groan rose, insistent and close. Someone was on the other side of the xylophone, and they crawled across the floor toward me. I scrambled to my feet and pushed the xylophone away. I skittered across the wall toward the door. The instrument toppled over on the long form in the darkness, clanging. My heart was about to rip from my chest. The person, a large man, looked gravely injured, his blood-soaked body glistening in the dull starlight. He dragged himself by his one remaining arm, and a tangled mess of IV tubes and wires trailed behind him. He raised his head, looking in my direction. His eyes glowed like a cat. He made another groaning noise. I looked around the room, and everyone had stopped moving. The scrum in the middle of the room stopped being a scrum. Instead, they all crowded together, all looking at me like I was the teacher on the first day of school.
Adam,
one of them croaked.
Adam,
several more of them repeated. They shuffled, crawled, and lurched toward me in the darkness. Fuck, 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 fuck! I turned around and banged hard on the double doors. Help! Get me the fuck out of here! Help! Help!
Shut up!
Came the muffled voice from the other side.
Come on! They're doing something weird! Get me the hell out of here!
A hand touched my leg, and I jumped. Panicked, I ran along the wall toward the other exit, dodging the reaching hand of another C2. I pushed against the double doors of the emergency exit, but as expected, they didn't open. I scrambled up onto the stage and clawed my way through the curtain. Two felt-blocked doorways led to the backstage area, and I tripped over an IV stand as I rushed through one. absolute darkness filled the backstage. I couldn't see my own hands. I reached along the wall, looking for a place to hide. My hands found a light switch, and I flipped it. To my surprise, an overhead fluorescent light blinked on, filling the small backstage with a dull yellow light.
Adam.
I could hear them through the curtains. Any moment. Shit. Another door stood vigil on the far wall, and I assumed it led outside. I reached it in three steps, grabbed the handle, but it was locked. Damn! The room was filled with large cases for bass drums and other instruments, and a pile of dusty black music stands lay against the other wall. Other than that, it was empty. There was no way out. I picked up a music stand, yanked off the top, and held it like a club, waiting for them to come into the room. I could hear them clomping up on the stage. There were 20 at least. What was I going to do? If I hit them, they'd feel no pain. They could overwhelm me in seconds. Despite the cold of the room, sweat poured down my face, and my slick, quivering hands had trouble grasping onto the black metal stand. They came from both sides. Three people shouldered into the room on the left, and four more on the right. All of them were men. No, there was a girl. 10 years old or so. What the? Half of her scalp was gone, peeled back and hanging, a red, purple, and white skull cap poking out on her right side. Her yellow ASU shirt was soaked red with blood. Dark rings hung under her eyes. She wore ripped jeans and only one shoe. She stepped farther into the room while the others guarded the door.
Stay back!
I yelled. My voice cracked.
Adam,
the girl said.
Don't be afraid. We don't want to harm you.
Listen, you little freak chop. I will smash your face if you get any closer.
I meant it, too. I didn't care if she was just a little girl. I backed up against the wall. I swung the stand overhead, hoping I looked more menacing than I felt. The little girl cocked her head to the side, and a clump of wet something fell from her scalp and splattered on the floor.
She called to you, but you didn't come. She loves you, Adam. We love you. Nif needs you.
A man in the doorway staggered forward, clutching his chest. He fell hard to the floor, dead. The girl looked at the dead man and looked back at me.
You didn't come. She needs you.
Stay back!
I said. My brain reeled as I parsed what she said. I meant to say something more menacing, but all I could manage was...
Nif is still alive?
Yes, Nif is alive. Of course she is alive. She is more alive than she has ever been.
I felt myself falter.
Can you talk to her for me?
The girl frowned.
It doesn't work like that. We can feel her, but she's fading. We're all fading. We need to get back to what we had, to what we must be.
What a mindfuck this was, to hear this coming from such a small child, let alone a child with a massive head wound.
Look, you're freaking me out. If you're not going to attack me, or eat me, or turn me into whatever you are, then leave me alone. I just want to get out of here. And
I wasn't going to tell her that I wanted to save Nif.
I just want to get away.
Don't you want to see her? To feel her? To know her? We can help you.
No offense, kid, but I don't want your help. Not if it means I will become like you.
Do not worry,
she said, taking another step into the room.
Nif wants you to know it's beautiful. She says it's her turtle pond. All it's missing is you.
My mind went from fucked to gang raped.
Turtle pond. She said that?
Yes. We all feel it's an apt description.
There's this pet shop in town Nif and I frequented for our ferret supplies, and they have this side room with dozens of aquariums and fish of all shapes and sizes. There's this one huge tank tucked in the corner with a not-for-sale red-eared slider that's always sitting half in, half out of the water, perched on this little rock. Niff liked the turtle, and the pet shop Turtle Pond. His name was Gustavo, even though it was a she.
Do you see that?
She said that first time we saw Gustavo. What?
She's smiling,
Niff said. She got a slight Mona Lisa smile on her own lips.
I think that's heaven right there. She has everything she wants. She has food, a clean tank, and a rock to sit on, half in and half out of the water. She doesn't worry about anything. Her first memory was probably right here, and she doesn't even know what it means to have worry or fear.
Sounds kind of boring if you ask me.
She doesn't even know what it's like to be bored. Happiness is all she knows.
Once, I suggested we try to talk the pet shop owners into letting us buy Gustavo and her tank, and Niff was aghast at the suggestion.
Are you crazy? How could you even think about it?
I don't understand, I said, perplexed. I thought you liked her.
She already has her happy turtle pond. If we try to take her away or move her, all we can do is mess it up. All we can do is ruin it for her.
I never mentioned it again. But now, when this little drone girl said, Turtle Pond, I knew it came from Niff. And I knew what she meant, how she felt in the grinder. And for a full second, maybe two, I wanted to feel that too. But then I looked at the dead man on the floor and the girl with the gaping, horrific head wound. That beautiful, safe feeling they felt, that Niff felt, was an illusion. Just like the turtle pond was an illusion. It wasn't heaven. They just didn't know better. The grinder had put something into their mind so invasive, so malevolent, it wiped away everything, even pain, and replaced it with a not-so-willful ignorance of everything else they'd ever known. Randy had once asked me if I'd rather be stupid and happy or intelligent and miserable. I never knew how to answer that question until that moment, standing in the small room, holding a music stand as a weapon, facing a 10-year-old girl and her zombie posse. I knew I'd rather have my free will. The idea of losing it scared me beyond anything else in the world. Except losing Niff. That scared me more. Still, I knew nothing good could come from talking to these people. They weren't quite like how the soldiers described them either. I wondered if there were variations to their craziness, like those who'd been attached longer were more likely what they called a C1, and the ones who were disengaged from the grinder accidentally were C2s. Or maybe they were all the same, like ants in colonies with the workers and the fighters and the queen.
We can help you.
I don't want your help!
The girl smiled, and as if on cue, all of them backed out of the room.
It doesn't matter. We're going to help you anyway. We're going to help you reunite with Niff. Just you watch.
I was left alone in the room with the corpse. My hands shook so hard I dropped the music stand and it clattered on the floor. I stood in the corner of the room for several minutes, not knowing what to do or how to react. There was a clock on the wall. It was just after 3 a.m. On a normal night, Niff and I would have been asleep. I didn't work Sundays, and I slept until mid-afternoon if I could get away with it. A commotion broke out in the main room. I crept forward, exiting the backstage and peeking through the curtain just as the light for the entire room switched on.
Back! Back!
A pair of guards said through the open door, each brandishing their weapons. The C2s ignored them, though none were near the door. Other soldiers brought in about 10 more people, all of whom looked injured and unable to walk on their own. Each person required 2 or 3 soldiers to carry them, and they were just laid on the floor like rags. Some of the people already looked dead and bloated. Others groaned and reached their arms into the air. With the lights now on, I could see the wall to my left where the man had been writing something. As I feared, he'd used blood as his ink. Come not within the measure of my wrath. I didn't know where that was from, but it seemed familiar. The girl stood on the floor at the foot of the stage. She turned toward me and said,
"It's best you get down."
At first I thought she meant, get down off the stage. What she really meant was, get down because some of the most fucked up shit you've ever seen is about to happen.
What the?
One of the soldiers cried, dropping the legs of the body he held. The other 2 soldiers, holding the same body, dropped the heavy man and scrambled further into the room. Both of them screamed, wiping at themselves. I couldn't see what their problem was. All three soldiers yelled and danced as if possessed.
Go, go, go!
Another soldier screamed. The soldiers still in the room sprinted toward the double doors. The man they'd dropped blocked the doors open, and the soldiers vaulted him like a hurdle. More screaming erupted from outside the room. Shots rang out. I glanced around at the C2s. Had they played a mental trick on the soldiers? Made them think they were being attacked by phantoms? A soldier fell backwards into the room, waving his arms wildly. He tripped over the body in the doorway, and his mask went flying. The young man was no older than 19 or 20, and he clawed at his face with his gloved hands. The C2s in the room just stood and watched. Then I saw it. One of the bodies was that of a fat, almost naked woman who looked to be about 18 months pregnant. She wore nothing but spandex shorts and a way too tight shirt that covered her shoulders and exposed her pale white and stretch-marked chest and stomach. The whole time she lay there, just twitching like her finger was stuck in a light socket. In the horror and commotion of the room, I'd only barely registered her presence. My eyes caught her movement, and I stared. Her white stomach extended like one of those Jiffy Pop popcorn things you put directly on the stovetop. Her skin ripped open with an audible, fabric-tearing sound. Out came the spiders.